The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is going on, guys? You are listening to the HSP SmackDown Review. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berger. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. Follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. We are back once again here, trendsetter. Feels good to be here. Another week of the SmackDown Review HSP style. What is going on, man? How you doing?
What's going on, man? This was honestly... You know, some have been snooze fest, guys. They have been. But you know what? It's pretty interesting because now we're getting close to, believe it or not, almost the end of summer. I hate to say it. Building up towards SummerSlam. Man, some pretty interesting stuff. A pretty cool way of how SmackDown ended. We'll talk about it too. But I am super excited. The crew listening in, make sure you guys follow us, like Jeff said, on all our social media platforms out there. Check out our YouTube channel as well. Oh, man. Can't wait to dive into this. I mean, I'm ready for a good time. There are a couple weeks, Jeff, where I'm not because it's not a good time. You just want to get through it. This one was actually pretty good.
Really good to be back. Of course, we relaunched HSP this week. So if you guys want to listen to that, go to bodyslam.net. It was great, man. It's great to be back here in the mix with wrestling. We thoroughly enjoyed AEW this past Wednesday, and now we're here doing SmackDown. You're right. The last couple of weeks have been kind of a lag, man. It was really dragging, but this week we are advancing. We are into SummerSlam mode, so a lot of stuff to talk
say
about.
It isn't so. Say summer's almost not over. Come on, man.
Yeah, it's
crazy. It barely was here. What are you talking about?
We got to live up to this August, man. And a new month here. It is August here on HSP and everywhere, and you know,
everywhere. We hope everybody follows the same calendar that we have.
We're going to kick off the month here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Follow us on all our social media at iSpot Podcast, on bodyslam.net, on the Shining Wizards.
And you know, it's going to be weird when summer's over, Jeff, honestly. The fact that you're not going to be wearing short, sleeveless shirts anymore.
Oh, I'm Pat McAfee in it, baby.
Yeah, you're literally copying.
Guns out, baby. Guns out. And if this ever goes to video, I can hear everyone just making fun of me saying, guns, what guns?
Well, but it's not an if, you know, it's just a matter of when.
But trendsetter, so let's start off with the main event here, because obviously there's a lot of going on here. You had Bayley and Nikki Cross. Nikki Cross was going into this really believing she had a legitimate chance to walk away as the SmackDown Women's Champion.
That's cute.
You know, she really, really... gave it her best shot. I mean, she really left it all out there, and it's tough when you lose a close one like that. You know, you think you're gonna have the pin there, and all of a sudden, like, you know, Bayley's Bayley. You know, she was able to change that and basically face planted her for the victory. But you got to give them credit though. This was the main event, and I think they delivered. Both of them did.
Well, you know, I had questions about it being the main event. I understand why they did it, though, because they are literally building the whole show around Sasha and Bayley, and obviously the impact they've had on all three brands, basically. So, yeah, it would make sense from a business standpoint. To me, I didn't think it was built up to be the main event. I wanted to see the IC title and the show, because I really feel that title right now is, you know, if you want to give it that grandeur, you want to give it that importance, man, importantly, putting it at the end of the show is definitely where to go. But, again, not bad for the beginning. But speaking of this one, too, you're right. I mean, losing a tough one, yeah, okay, we could say that about Nikki Cross. You know, a valiant effort, you know, a participation medal. That's all great, Jeff. But let's be honest here. The mere fact that what I enjoyed more about this is the fact that we had to finally see Nikki Cross kind of showcase who she is, not necessarily just as an in-talent ring performer, but what she is as a personality. She came in with Sanity, or came in solo before Sanity came in. We all know how that worked out. And basically didn't say much. You're just this lunatic, crazy lady. So adorable, though. And but still, you know, that transitioned over to her alliance with Alexa Bliss, and that formed something out of nowhere. It just kind of organically developed. And now we had the ability of seeing what Nikki Cross could really do in the ring. So this is why I was kind of excited for this. Not for the idea that Nikki Cross had a shot against Bayley. I mean, hell, she's been dominant for so long, and no offense to Nikki Cross in terms of a character. But, yeah, for this to happen would be a huge major upset. But I was happy to see the fact that Bayley and Nikki Cross were able to showcase their talents very well. Bayley's been doing it for a really long time. this was finally the chance, after two opportunities at the title, that Nikki Cross finally had an opportunity to showcase what she can do in the ring.
Yeah, and once again, though, falls short of the ultimate
goal.
Hey,
let's not make some short jokes here, man. Right,
yeah, no. From short one to another, no.
But
no,
she's so adorable, though. Of course she's short.
Well, I mean, adorable to a point, because now it's been 2 weeks in a row where she's shoved down on Alexa Bliss. And
yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you don't put your hands on Alexa Bliss like that. And
more importantly, you don't shove her down.
Showing Alexa Bliss' vulnerability, she still was emotional after that one. There was no like, all right, you hit me once, fine, I'll let it go. The second time, she still was very like, you know, upset because of Nikki's frustration. And that's just weird seeing that of Alexa Bliss. You're so used to her, you know, again, with that heel character and that persona showing so much vulnerability. And then, of course, we get The Fiend comes out and puts the lovely, beautiful Alexa Bliss in the mandible claw. And we know this is setting up something between Braun and The Fiend coming up probably at SummerSlam, where, you know, it's all right, you put him in the swamp, he's still missing. We saw Firefly Funhouse where, you know, Bray Wyatt went to find Braun Strowman. You know, he's somewhere out there lurking, but a part of him will always be part of the swamp. But this is definitely a way to reignite the rivalry, which is Braun Strowman and The Fiend now, and we're probably going to get this at SummerSlam.
Man, can Braun Strowman hold his breath? Unbelievable. He still hasn't submerged under... he still hasn't come up above the surface.
Yeah.
He definitely submerged with Bray Wyatt, and he's still in the swamp somewhere.
Somewhere in swamp.
Jeez, put a tracker on that guy. Put a bell on him or something, for God's sake. You can't find him now. With all the technology we have, Jeff, we cannot find Braun Strowman. What is it, the Bermuda Triangle out there?
He's probably in the Bermuda
swamp?
Triangle. That's probably where
seriously?
It is. It's in the corners of the Bermuda Triangle.
In the corners of parts unknown where the Ultimate Warrior used to live?
Right by Death Valley.
Yes, unbelievable. It's freaking ridiculous you still can't find Braun Strowman. But nice touch, because they do add in Alexa Bliss to the storyline. But, you know, as much as we admire Alexa Bliss, and speaking of admiring, Jeff, let's take a moment of Bliss, and let's just take a few seconds to admire the beauty, not just physically, but internally, of what Alexa Bliss is. All right, so if you don't mind, let's take a few minutes. Okay, so...
She was all right there, too.
Oh, my God, she's just stunning, man.
And a side note that has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about today, but just because I follow her on Instagram, Xia Li, she is not bad to look at either.
Yeah, she's a looker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very attractive.
Nice.
Yes, very attractive.
Yeah. But anyways,
it's interesting. It's okay. You're right there, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
I'll live.
We'll see. But to incorporate her in this, she was incorporated into the storyline, especially towards the end in the swamp match between Braun and Bray. Nice touch there, because there has been history between
Team
Braun,
Little Big.
Yeah, Team Little Big, and the mere fact that they're showcasing Braun's vulnerability. Now, from a character standpoint, I understand sometimes you have to change things and evolve. You know, you want to make Braun Strowman more relatable, so now you give him these vulnerabilities or these things that he cares about more that we've seen more. Especially after the whole Jeff Hardy incident outside the Performance Center, Braun Strowman caring so much about other people's well-being, kind of weird. Same scenario here with Alexa Bliss, someone who was so cold-hearted, and that was so appealing about her, so beautiful, yet so cunning and calculating and terrible a human being, now cares so much. So it's interesting. It goes back, Jeff, to the dynamic we talked about before, where some individuals just portray a certain type of character better than others. You know, not that Alexa Bliss hasn't done an amazing job, and not that it's not believable in the scenario, but to see her vulnerable like that, or to see her in a scenario where she's caring so much about, you know, Nikki Cross, her best friend, you know, shoving her down the second time, and her being almost heartbroken where she could barely even pick herself up, then The Fiend comes out. And one thing about The Fiend, though, it's that it's a great job that they've done in terms of building out this character again. But honestly, like, if people complained about The Undertaker's gong every time it hit and saying, oh my God, I'm so sick and tired of this.
That little noise.
That noise of, like, screeching, the equivalent of, like, taking, and I know it's archaic, but there used to be a thing called a chalkboard, guys, where you would use this thing called chalk and write on the board. There's no whiteboards with markers anymore. I know that's the new thing now, but if you took your fingernails, and had long fingernails, across that chalkboard, as they call it, and scratch it, it would be so irritating to the ears. And that's what it sounded like. So go Google what a chalkboard is. Google the sound effect on YouTube. You'll probably find out what it is. The equivalent of that. So annoying.
Oh,
to the point where I'm just like, all right, it makes me want to change the channel sometimes. But
Couldn't change it.
Wanted to see
time.
What happened.
Exactly.
Huge congratulations to Alexa because, you know, it takes a real man, a real woman to take that mandible claw move, and she did it well.
I like the facial reactions, too.
Yeah, she's amazing at that. So it's definitely built up the storyline now, not only where The Fiend and Braun Strowman are going to go, but where Alexa and possibly Nikki Cross might go.
It's
so
funny,
great
too,
job.
Where Bray Wyatt's like putting up the hand and you're waiting for her, and she's like he's kind of like, oh, coming for a landing. You know,
it's like, you know, here comes the airplane thing.
But actually, a mandible claw and, you know, all that stuff. But,
I would be kind of scared to take that, to be honest with you. With things the way they are now and everybody's so, like, you know, worried about germs and things of that nature, no offense to Bray, but I wouldn't want to take that mandible claw, even if it was a glove on. Like, where's that glove been?
A lot of questions, though, Trendsetter, about that is, one, is Nikki Cross, did Nikki Cross plan this? Did she know that this was going to happen at the end? Did she sacrifice Alexa Bliss to The Fiend?
I don't know, because it looked like Nikki was very distraught that it didn't appear that it might have been a setup. But who knows? It could be. As we start progressing the story further and see what happens as we lead towards SummerSlam, you might be right on that. But I just think right now Nikki's going through a nervous breakdown, and basically everything that supposedly was important to her means absolutely nothing, because all she cares about now is her own individual spotlight and, more importantly, her individual run as being a champion, legitimate.
But you know what conspiracy theorists are going to say, though, right?
The Earth is flat, basically?
They're going to say – Kyrie Irving says that, but
– Who's he?
I don't know. I don't even know as a
guy
Mets
who impersonates an NBA player, basically.
Yeah. So a lot of people are going to say that Nikki Cross has something to do with it, that it was premeditated. She could be Sister Abigail in disguise this whole time. So there's
so many ways you can go with this, yes.
And to me, this has become the best storyline right now on SmackDown.
Yeah.
It could be right now in the WWE, because it has led to a lot of theories of where this is going, and right now Raw's not doing anything like that.
Well,
and SmackDown, to me, has the best storyline.
Isn't that what I mentioned before during the AEW Dynamite recap, where I said, you know, when we talked about, you know, Hangman and Omega and FTR and the Elite and all this stuff, like, there's so many twists and turns that the possible story could go, and you never know. So now giving us the ability of this storyline, Nikki, Alexa, Braun, and Bray, they all intertwine, and a lot of links can be connected there in terms of Nikki with The Fiend or Bray Wyatt, and the history between Braun and Alexa, and Alexa and
Alexa,
Nikki, and
Alexa,
Braun,
Alexa.
And the history between Braun and Bray. A lot of intertwining there, and that's the best thing about what we love, guys, and when you love listening to the show about wrestling, is that now you can intertwine all the storylines and then be excited about what the outcome could be, because it could be anything.
But you got to execute. And that's the thing. Like,
well, whatever your decision is, you must execute it to the fullest potential, because at the end of the day, there are people who are not going to be happy, because maybe your theory, Jeff, might not come out to play. My theory might not come out to play, though we've been pretty good at predicting what things might happen through no fault, because we're that damn good.
Exactly.
But, well, maybe me, not you. But that's what's going to happen, though. You know, it's going to leave you wanting to see what happens, the outcome of a movie. You're like, what's going to happen? We all have our theories. Are there spoilers? They left a little, as they call it, Easter eggs there for you to kind of detect what's going to happen. Nice to see how they're playing it out, and it's amazing. And I applaud the WWE now coming up with storylines in a scenario like this, where it leaves us kind of now speculating, and now you can go in any direction you want.
I don't know if applaud, give them maybe a little
Well, I can applaud them for that. Yeah, you can applaud them for that. How long have we been dealing with stale storylines? Storylines have gone too long. And this one now piques our interest, doesn't it?
It really does, man. And another theory could be that this is what leads Alexa to go back to the dark side. She definitely has now been played by Nikki Cross, not once, but twice. And all Alexa Bliss is trying to do is support her friend. It was Alexa Bliss, the one who basically salvaged Nikki Cross's career, because let's be honest, she was toiling around there, really wasn't being used. And then you put her alongside Alexa Bliss, and you get to feed off of her and her momentum, and to kind of just absorb the greatness that is Alexa Bliss. And now she's kind of bit the hand that feeds her twice. And this one being the worst, because she, whether it was unknowingly or knowingly, fed her to The Fiend. So what happens to Alexa Bliss? I'm looking forward to this. And this has single-handedly become the best storyline on both brands right now. So as we head into SummerSlam, it's going to be interesting. But this is definitely going to boil up to a showdown between The Fiend and Braun Strowman. And most likely, we're going to see Braun Strowman in the next coming weeks. And it's also going to be interesting trendsetter to find out Braun's story, like what happened after the match. Like, where has he been? So that's another thing to them, curious to see if they can, you know, put into the storyline.
Yeah.
Where has he been?
Not where has he been, though, but where's that character going? Because usually when certain characters take this lengthy amount of time, like, let's just take one example, Jeff. When The Undertaker at the Royal Rumble was put in the casket and Yokozuna basically won the casket match, he had to come back reinvented some way differently. When he got buried alive by Mankind, right? He went away for a while, probably to nurse some injuries. Who knows, maybe the same thing is for Braun, but then Undertaker came reinventing himself as something completely different. I'd be kind of disappointed if Braun just came back as the same old Braun. It's got to be an evolution of the character. It's got to be an evolution of what he looks like in terms of the look and the style. So that might be what we're looking for, anticipating, leading up towards SummerSlam. I'll be honest with you, Jeff. As much as he is the Universal Champion and people want to see him on TV, let's be honest. For the SmackDown, at least, the IC title has been holding up the show. So has the Women's title and the Tag Team Championships. Right now, nobody's really, unfortunately, paying attention to the Universal Championship. Could care less about it. So with that being said, I wouldn't mind waiting all the way until SummerSlam for Braun to come back.
Yeah, well, and hopefully that changes, though. But I think if you want us to care about this match, then we definitely want to see Braun Strowman before it. It would just add a little bit more build to this match. Now, I agree with you. Maybe you don't have to see Braun till SummerSlam.
I disagree.
So it piques that curiosity.
I disagree, though.
Wait, you want to see him before?
No, I would say I wouldn't want to see Braun before. All right,
then
that.
So I'm saying other people are going to agree with you that they don't want to see Braun till SummerSlam because it piques the curiosity of what kind of Braun Strowman we're going to get. You know, maybe they just say Michael Cole and Corey Graves are like, well, we have heard that Braun Strowman will be at SummerSlam. We don't know how he's been affected or something, but I believe adding this whole Alexa Bliss thing, we're going to see Braun before that, just because we're going to see an emotional Braun Strowman maybe accept Bray the Fiend's challenge at SummerSlam. It's just a theory. Either or works. The trendsetter's idea works too because it piques that curiosity of what will happen. What kind of Braun Strowman will we see at SummerSlam? So the build for SummerSlam is definitely heating up. So that is, again, a match I'm looking forward to now when you add the whole Alexa Bliss dynamic, trendsetter. And, you know, going back to other matches here, man, I mean, let's just talk about really quick some people that we haven't even talked about in the last month or so, and that was Mandy Rose and Otis. So basically, they've been MIA for the longest time, and then you can see them backstage, and like we haven't had date night in a long time, and basically,
you know
they're setting up. I know, here. And basically, they've set up a date that they're going on to, but Mandy's got to get ready, although she already looked like she was ready to go, if you know what I mean.
Like, what, she has to do another layer of lip gloss on
her? I know. And so, you know, she's getting ready. Otis is excited. He can't wait. And then Sonya Deville comes back and just blindsides Mandy Rose and does, like I said, one of the no-nos is puts lipstick all over her face, starts beating her down, says how her life is ruined by Mandy Rose, and then says, oh, you know what, now you're going to remember me, what do you have now, and then basically just cuts off Mandy's locks, man, and I don't know where we're going with this. Could we get a hair versus hair match? Although it's already, you know, it's already been taken away by Sonya Deville on Mandy Rose's hair, so, you know, although I like this rivalry, and you said it's about making storylines between the females that's outside of the title, where do you think this is going?
Well, I think I know where it's going. Before I dive into that, I mean, like, Sonya Deville, man. What can you say? She definitely, from when she debuted to where she is now, in terms of in the ring, has definitely improved. And we were talking about it. She had some pretty interesting matches with Lacey Evans when she was a babyface at that point, I guess, Lacey. And now she's not. You ruined my life. You know, here's the thing. Like I mentioned before, and you just said it too, right? It's cool to find storylines outside of the title that can pique your interest, or you can kind of be invested in somewhat, or be, you know, somewhat intrigued by, right? But the mere fact of this up and down roller coaster, and not even a fun roller coaster, and usually roller coasters are fun, this one isn't as amusing because it's been just a little bit inconsistent from my point of view. Because, you know, yes, they broke up, but the team broke up because towards the end, Mandy was paying more attention to Otis, which Sonya didn't like.
Say it again. Mandy was paying more attention to Otis. Yeah, that's just
Sonya didn't like, and then that caused the split in the team of why Sonya
was
trying
to. You think it was a little crush?
Maybe, you know, that's what would make it more interesting too. For the mere fact we know that Sonya Deville and her lifestyle, what she is, she's into the females. So it would make sense if they would want to go that route. No, let's be honest. It would make sense if they would go that route that she was in love with Mandy, there, and now her jealousy with Otis is overbearing because she can't take it anymore. So in a way, she wants to sabotage anything good in Mandy's life, which would make sense why Sonya makes the claim.
I'm waiting for that.
But it makes sense why then Sonya would make the claim that you ruined my life, because we've all been in the scenario, right? Jeff, more times than others, the fact that this woman's ruined my life. She ruined my life. She broke my heart type of scenario. And me, not so much,
she broke my heart.
Yeah. But that would make more sense to me. And now, building up to the fact that, yeah, there have been rumors circulating on the Twitter land, as I call it.
Twitterverse?
I call it Twitter land now.
Yeah.
Because everybody uses Twitterverse or Twitter sphere. I call it Twitter land now. About there could be a potential hair versus hair match. Here's the scenario where that would be interesting. I mean, Yuri Kala saw glimpses of it where she chopped off good chunks of Mandy's hair. She'll restyle it. She'll still look amazing. I mean, I'm sure Mandy would look beautiful even with a bald head. But it's building the scenario that she had the clippers at the very end ready to attack and then was stopped. At that point, where the hell was Otis, right? Great boyfriend there.
Oh, yeah. Getting ready for those ribs. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Sounds like the Kool-Aid guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But ultimately, it's going to lead to something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it's going to go in the direction where people might think it might go, where you're going to shave Mandy's head. I think Sonya will be ultimately the person. That's the payoff. If it is a hair versus hair match, let's say at SummerSlam, Mandy will be the one to finally exact revenge on somebody who's been tormenting her ever since they broke up their partnership, tag team partnership. And, you know, Sonya will be the one being shaved bald.
And the funny thing is, I'm interested in this a little bit. I'm curious.
Yeah.
You know?
Because it takes away from the whole Otis Mandy thing. Now it's between Sonya and Mandy.
Yeah, and does anyone remember that Otis is the Money in the Bank winner, too?
No.
Anyone? No?
Nope.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make sure. Listen, King Corbin, to me, was...
What a jerk that guy is.
Yeah, but you know what? He told the truth, okay? So there's so many things to go into here with Baron Corbin. He was all over the place this week on SmackDown. He's a little stir of the drink, that guy is, because he, approached Shorty G. Now, they've had their differences, and again, Shorty G's been mocked by Baron Corbin for being short and, you know, all that, you know, sophomoric stuff that Vince McMahon finds hilarious. Ha-ha! Right? But now he's basically, you know, buttering up Shorty G, saying, hey, listen, how guys like Matt Riddle here coming in and taking all the advantages while you're on the sidelines, you're looking at him. And, you know, it kind of tugged to Shorty G's frustration with the company, with SmackDown, just in general. And the funny thing to me is that they use these storylines because, let's be honest, they read Twitter, they read social media, they know what's going on, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's funny that they address the situation, but they do nothing. Like, they realize that, hey, you're overlooked, hey, you're this and that, you know, you should be doing this, but they use it as storyline, but then at the end, they don't really, you know, back up these people, you know, they don't give them that push. It's funny that, it's just funny, because I chuckled, because this is all true. Everything Corbin said was true, and something that we've talked about, that, again, social media has talked about, but at the end of the day, they use it as storyline, but then they don't, you know, they just use the storyline. They don't really push you, you know, and it's just, I was like, oh man, here we go. Storyline use, using, you know, social media, whatever. But Shorty G was like, oh, so now you're going to come butter me up and stuff like that. You know, it's not going to work, basically. But, you know, it left that chance where, he was like, I'm at
it
least
left an impression
about
it,
you know, because he was speaking truth. If someone speaks truth to you, you can think about it, right?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, you're not speaking to me truth because everything comes out of your mouth are just lies and obscenities. But honestly, let's be honest, though. The best villains, whether we're talking about not just in wrestling, but anybody who makes the best villains speak a little bit of the truth, things that are relatable. And in this case, yeah, not just manipulative, but, you know, in the sense that, of course, yeah, it's manipulative because Baron Corbin is using this to get something that he wants out of Shorty G. His name's Gable. I'm going to call him Chad Gable, right? I'm not calling him Shorty G, right? But with Chad Gable, is a lot of it's been true, and you could tell it left an impression on him in terms of it is reality. He has been overlooked. He's an amazing talent. He's got a great look. I mean, he's got a great physique too, but the only issue with him right now is because he's undersized. He's not 6'2" or 6'3", and that works against him. But then you have Corbin going up against, you know, another guy who's pretty undersized, and, you know, a lot of stories are going right now if anybody who's undersized is an underdog. The story's been played already. So, you know, Corbin's in a match with, you know, Daniel Bryan's, you know, his Mr. Miyagi teacher to Daniel LaRusso type of scenario. And that match occurs. Matt Riddle comes in to kind of help out towards the end of the match, or not just help out, but, you know, get his revenge on Baron Corbin. And all of a sudden, here comes
King Corbin to you.
His name's Baron Corbin, okay? I know somebody might be disagreeing with me when I say it, because to him, Baron Corbin's the MVP, and he is. He's a very valuable player on SmackDown in terms of that stir that you mentioned, Jeff.
He stirs a drink on SmackDown he in does. His kingdom.
He just doesn't stir it around Jeff Hardy, though. And, yeah, then you have Chad Gable come in and kind of help out in an amazing superplex on Matt Riddle, and there you might see the fact that everything that Corbin said was pretty much tugged on Chad Gable's heartstrings, and now he looks at Matt Riddle as the enemy. So it's like it worked.
Yeah, they had the little wink or the little head nod there that I think I might take you up on your king's ransom, and I'm pretty sure we're gonna get Gable and Matt Riddle,
which would be amazing. That would be awesome.
Oh my god, man! Give them 25 minutes. Let them do their thing.
Yes, definitely.
Because listen, man, Chad Gable can go. You know what I mean?
You can.
Chad Gable. Here's a funny thing, right? He stands next to other wrestlers that are his same size, yet he's short, right? So that whole thing is stupid. Knock it off. Get rid of that nickname. Put him Chad Gable. Call him Bad Chad Gable. You know?
Well, I hope that's what they do.
He's Bad Chad Gable. You know?
I hope that's what they do. They change that name because the Shorty G is ridiculous. They did it more to make him more fan-friendly. People would like calling him Shorty G. I guess that's Vince's idea. Let's bring back Chad Gable, the real Chad Gable that we want to see.
Bad Chad. That's what I want to see. I like the short hair. I like the short hair. He's got a look to him. You know what I mean? He could be definitely a champion, you know, Intercontinental champion, and take it from there. But, like, when I see a guy like Chad Gable, and I'm, like, someone who loves booking outside of here, right? I like saying, oh, I could do this with that guy. That's someone that I would be like, you know, I would have that little Stu Harbor, like, oh, yeah, let me get him, you know, let me work with him a little bit there. And yeah, I know I can make this guy a star. You know, something like that. I feel like he could be somebody. I just don't like giving up on people. So I think everyone can be somebody. And, you know, Drew Gulak, again, is somebody that, you know, he had a little bit of a push, but now he's, like, stuck here now jobbing for King Corbin, or he's now toiled, like, I don't know where Daniel Bryan is. I guess they're expecting the baby or something like that.
Who cares where Daniel Bryan is
on TV?
Drew Gulak is doing the job Daniel Bryan should be doing now, putting people over.
Yeah, and then don't come back and tell me that Drew Gulak is his teacher when he's losing on SmackDown now, you know, so, you know, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And then before
those Zoom teaching sessions aren't working out for Drew Gulak.
And then why I'm a huge fan of King Corbin is because he said everything that I think we've all been thinking, but just we're afraid to say it. But I've said it here so many weeks
in a row,
that he just can't stand the sob story of Jeff Hardy anymore. I am completely done. I'm tapping out. No more of this Jeff Hardy story, man. I don't want to hear anymore. He comes out. He's like, oh, I overcame Sheamus. You know, surviving is a never-ending battle, but I know I'm going the right path. Listen, let's be honest. Jeff Hardy is just it's not if but when. Let's be honest, okay? It's not if but when, because, you know, it just is. It just is. And Sheamus made a point on his promo saying that, you know what, it was a battle that he was overwhelmed because he was basically in Jeff Hardy's home court. Basically, so, but King Corbin comes out and says, oh my god, I'm tired of hearing you week after week, this and that, wow, 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 the sob story, and he said he would have been a perfect guy to take him up on the King's Ransom, but didn't think that Jeff Hardy had it in him to do stuff like that anymore, because he thinks that Jeff Hardy's weak. Basically, that's all what we've been made to come out him looking as weak, because even though he got the victory over Sheamus, to me, Jeff Hardy, if he keeps coming up with the sob story, it's not a story of redemption. To me, it's a story of self-pity, and King Corbin said everything that we think, and yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, with Jeff Hardy, with his track record, it's not if, it's when.
Wow, powerful stuff there, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, the whole scenario, too, with me is that when you look at the whole Jeff Hardy Sheamus storyline and where it's progressed from where it started to where it is now, and who knows, maybe this is the conclusion. Maybe they will move past each other and move on to something else, which, you know, would be great, I feel, because I think both of them need to now move on to other things, because this storyline, as Jeff and I have said weeks and weeks before, and I'm sure a lot of people have been mentioning it, you guys, the crew, probably feel the same way. It's been kind of let out, and we have no problem with storylines that extend themselves very long for a huge buildup and a huge payoff. But to me, the payoff was kind of soured for the mere fact the way the storyline was progressed, where he had Jeff Hardy come out in the beginning dealing with his demons, dealing with his past, and Sheamus being that foil in terms of continually mentioning it. But as we kept talking about it over and over again, it just gets to the point, too, where Jeff says, yeah, it's not about redemption anymore. You know, it actually starts making someone like Jeff Hardy look more vulnerable and doesn't, you know, does it make you want to root for him more? I guess maybe, in a sense, if you keep hearing over and over again. But at some point, it reaches to the point where you're like, okay, it's nice to know some people overcame certain things, but all right, let's move on. Let's move past. Let's stop talking and talking.
Talking.
Stop talking there in my little, is that Staten Island or Long Island?
I don't know,
Island
Boston or
I'm terrible at accents. I make them up as I go along, but you know, it's my braces, guys. It's them talking about it over and over again. It gets to the point, all right, let's move on. Let's find out something more about you, and let's progress this going forward. But that didn't work, and it just kept getting so extremely annoying and frustrating on our part to talk about it. I'm sure to watch it wasn't enjoyable either. So now where's Jeff Hardy go from here? I don't know. Where does Sheamus go from here? I don't know. But I really just hope. The only thing I do know is I really want the storyline to finally be done with and move on to something else.
And honestly, about the Jeff Hardy, though, I mean, I'm just saying, though, it's the addiction is nothing to joke around or nothing to, you know, you root for him. But, like, when you hear these things constantly about Jeff Hardy and you hear it to be a self-pitying sobbing, like, you want the crowd reaction to feel for you. I get it, but too much of it is just overkill, right? And it just, some people will be watching this and they'll be saying, oh, Jeff Hardy, come on now, you are what you are, whatever. It's going to frustrate people and it's going to make them react like that. So, you know, at the end of the day, though, Jeff Hardy, again, he can do this without having this, you know, this sob story. It's kind of taken away from him. It's kind of detracting him. We know now. You don't have to keep enforcing it every week that, you know, he's gone through his issues. The smart wrestling fan is going to know what's going on. And if anything, they're just going to root for Jeff Hardy. Even if they didn't know that Jeff Hardy had this issue or this addiction, they are going to root for Jeff Hardy because he is that, you know, the charismatic enigma, you know. So, again, it's just overkill, and it's going to make some people go off just like I did, because it really is something that, you know, you really don't need Jeff Hardy to do this stuff right now, and you want him to proceed. And if he's going to win a championship, you want it to be because he's Jeff Hardy, not because of his sad sob story, because honestly, it is a sad story, and you're pulling for Jeff. But too much of this is like, come on, WWE, now let's not overplay this. And another person too who is going, in my opinion, in the right direction. Oh, before we do that, what the heck was Sheamus wearing? What was that?
That's his new look. That is like a
90s you know, boy band kind of look there on Sheamus.
Hey, bringing it back. Three count, right? From WCW.
Oh, my goodness, man. Wow. But going back to somebody who's on the right path, how about Big E, man? Was he not impressive against The Miz or what?
He was. And, you know, something that we've been looking forward to for so long, because we felt that, you know, Big E was demonstrating that type of ability to be believable. And that's always the thing people always talk about, right? The believability, although we're talking about the world of professional wrestling. But, you know, perception is reality is what I say too. And so now you're given the fact that he's going into singles competition against somebody like The Miz. Honestly, I wasn't expecting much from this match, but it surprised me because Big E showcased a lot, and The Miz really stepped up, and to me, I have a lot of respect for that, stepped up to make Big E look, even not that Big E's not good, but you could tell when somebody's there working twice as hard as you are to kind of make you that believable. That's also another unseen art form that isn't really noticed as much. Miz is really working hard with Big E. Showcase both guys really well. Makes you also reminds you, too, that Miz isn't as bad as people think he might be. Granted, he loses all the time now, and now people are looking at him as he's a loser. But the guy can go, too, and he can go very well. He's had some pretty great matches, especially last I can remember, a four-way Intercontinental title match where it was a great match, and he came out the winner. So with this, it's great. Establishes Big E. Doesn't do much for The Miz. Just showcases how much The Miz works for those people that are paying attention to it in terms of how good of a worker he is. And it looks at Big E now, that ability that he has that within him to be a single star. So I honestly understand the commentating team was doing their job, and that's the kind of story they want to build in terms of, well, you know, Big E's had a lot of success in tag team. How is he going to fare in the singles competition? Look, guys, let's not forget, and this is what frustrates me the most, the very most about WWE, or anybody that does this. The mere fact he hasn't had much singles success The guy's a former Intercontinental Champion, if we don't remember.
Yeah, but it's a long time
but
ago.
It's a long time. I get it, but he's had success. He's won an individual title on his own. So this isn't his first go-around. Yes, it's been his first go-around in a long time. But if you're unlike Jeff, who, you know, forgets how to ride a bike sometimes. Normally when you do know how to ride a bike, you don't forget. And he hasn't forgotten what it's like to be a singles competitor. So the mere fact they're building up that, oh, wow, you know, Biggie doesn't have Kingston.
It's kind of like
doesn't have it's Xavier Woods
it's
in his
like
corner.
A baby who's just
please.
Learning to walk,
yeah,
right?
Please. The guy can walk. I'm so surprised Biggie could make it to the ringside by himself because he didn't have the
Woods
New Day
Kobe
with him.
Kingston's blessing. Oh, he's got the support. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously. Like, he really needs that. He's a grown man. He's a man that benches probably 600 pounds and doesn't bounce it off his chest like some people do. He's got great form. This guy can go and handle himself alone in the ring. I just feel it.
And well, might add you.
Yeah, and I just feel it just diminishes the fact that, okay, yeah, you want to build him off as this somewhat – can you really look at Big E, Jeff, and make him look like an underdog?
Like he's handicapped.
Not just handicapped, but he's an underdog guy? Like, is it not believable that he could beat The Miz? Mm. Honestly. Like, am I going into this match looking at it on paper and saying, wow, Big E against The Miz, I don't know if Big E can do that one. Are you kidding me? Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, one, he was able to overcome Morrison's interference, right? So he's able to do that. Then he really tossed Miz around like a rag doll, basically the whole match. And if you look at the Miz's back and his arms and stuff like that, you can really tell how much the Miz sold for Big E. And again, they expressed how much of an athlete he is, his agility, and it's a great thing. But this idea that Big E is crawling in front of our eyes before he learns how to walk by, you know, is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And to me, it mocks the fan base and mocks the memory. Now, granted, people are not going to know what he did in terms of becoming the Intercontinental Champion prior to joining the New Day. Okay, but if you're not going to do that route, come on, let's not make it act. Let's not act as if Big E is incapable of beating people individually one-on-one. So to me, that's what really starts irking me. And people will be like, well, that's the story you want to build. You want to make sure people go behind him and know that, you know, he's someone now who's in a whole new world. Enough of that stuff. I am tired of being mocked. I mean, I'm sure 7-year-old will be like, this is stupid. Because, you know what, at the end of the day, they look at Big E, they see his athleticism, they see his size, they see his power. It is not believable that he can individually win a match by himself, let alone win a title individually. And hey, great finisher, by the way. Something I hadn't seen in a long time where he basically puts the guy's knee behind his neck and basically raised Miz off the floor. You got to be a little careful with that because who knows? I've had knee problems before. I don't want any hyperextension on my knees or pulling some ligaments and stuff like that. But great finisher. I mean, I was immediately tapping out when I saw Miz in that move. Like, Miz, tap. It's not worth it to sell anymore. Get out of it. It was awesome.
So, again, good signs for Big E. And, you know, Corey Graves was saying, I can see a championships in his future. So, obviously.
That's the smartest thing Corey Graves has said all day.
Very, very positive take on Big E. Just the way they're presenting it to you is like, come on now. Like, you know, he's been a singles champion before. He's wrestled single. He's debuted single. He in NXT, he was a singles wrestler. So, come on now.
He won the NXT title.
Listen, kudos, because this is something I think that, you know, worked with Asuka. And I think it could work with Shinsuke. Because he has this comedic side to him, which is, it's not, how can I say it? It's very subtle, you know, but still it works. And Cesaro is going to get a chance to hear, be the voice man for the team. And it's going to be interesting because he's not known for being the talker or whatever. But here he's going to get a chance to be the voice man for the Shinsuke, Nakamura, and Cesaro tag team. Great backstage segment with Lucha House Party. And it was cool. It was like the champion's suite or whatever. It was the champion's lounge. And it was just funny seeing Nakamura's facial expressions. And I'm really pulling for this tag team. I really hope they have success. And it sucks that Cesaro has been put as this tag team wrestler. He's been billed as this tag team guy, which, you know, obviously he's been successful in tag teams. And if he goes to the Hall of Fame, it's going to be as a tag team wrestler. But, you know, I'm interested to see what happens with the Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro tandem.
I am. And,
it's working for me so far.
It's working. It's great to see that they are now finally being given opportunities to showcase not only their talents in the ring, but what type of personalities they can be outside of the ring. So, yes, I mean, when you look at it, two individuals like Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro, who you would think should not be tag teaming together because they should just be individual stars of their own, Granted, don't have anything to do. Creative doesn't have anything for them to do, so let's pair them up. And they have been successful doing it. They've taken advantage of that opportunity. Now they're reaping the benefits. It's not over yet. It's still too quick to celebrate, but it's a little bit of a accomplishment knowing that they defeated the New Day, a dominant force in the WWE in terms of tag team wrestling, and now establishing themselves as the dominant team, not just on SmackDown, but trying to be the dominant team in WWE. I think they got a good shot at it, but we'll see where it goes from here. For me, how much I love tag team wrestling.
There
has to be a scenario.
You added the it's great.
Well, yeah, I put my in there too.
I love it.
So you have to add in newer tag teams and tag teams that to help solidify that championship. Because here's the thing: if they face the New Day again, or they're not going to, but the Usos.
Or Lucha House Party.
Lucha House Party. Right? What other teams are out there? So it's going to be now the big test is going to be not just can they be successful as a tag team, can they help build up that tag team division? Because now they're the pillar. So now if WWE brings these teams that we don't know of, they're going to have to work twice as hard to make them noticeable, to make these matches great, and also to showcase the fact that the tag team division is coming back. I don't know how you do it, though, in the fact that scenario that Vince McMahon doesn't like tag teams, which I understand, because back in the days when Jeff and I used to watch it, that's what it was all about, tag team wrestling. That was the excitement when you saw tag team wrestling. Those tag team titles were on the line. Oh, my goodness, you got LOD, Demolition, The Rockers, The Killer Bees, The British Bulldogs, The Heart Foundation. The list goes on and on and on.
We get it, Trendsetter. We get it. But the thing is you don't want them to be champions that don't do anything, right? Because they could talk, and we could get maybe 4 weeks of these behind-the-stage scenes, but we want to see them in action, right? But and we get it. It has to be the right team.
But more importantly, action. They got to be in action, because if they're not, then they're just staying there looking nice with the titles. It doesn't do anything for them. Exactly. It doesn't do anything for the tag team division.
And someone I'm going to say really to me stole the show this week, even in losing effort, and I think I'm going to do hashtag Lacey Evans deserves better. Lacey Evans is so much better as a heel. Her mannerisms, the way she used Naomi's hair to put her between the steel steps and continues to just be heel and really gets a lot of heat and is very underrated. Lacey Evans, I got to give it up to her, man. She, for some reason, they made her a face for a little bit, and now they did the right thing and made her a heel. She just is better at it. Falls short. She went for the woman's right, and then she got sunset flipped. And then Naomi did a really sick move when she slid through the ropes there. And, it was a very impressive move there. And dangerous maybe, but got the job done. And it was like a sunset flip kind of like on the outside. I don't know what it was, though. But it was like they didn't even – the colon and – Corey Graves were a little bit taken aback to by that move, but
it looked like she was trying to do a sliding into the version of like what a Canadian destroyer is, but completely missed the mark.
But still,
Lacey
luckily,
tried to save it, but the move was already botched anyway, and just it didn't look good. I'm like, I'm honestly at this point right now, when you have Naomi and Lacey Evans, just any match right now in general, whether it be women's or men's, less is more, guys. You don't have to go overboard into these amazing moves.
Lacey Evans impressive in a losing effort?
I think yes, but I think Lacey Evans has been really impressive for a while now, because her scenario she's dealt with where she faced Sonya Deville and the other matches she's had when she was a babyface at that time, when the changed, we do not know. But I guess karaoke brings the worst out of people, I guess. But, Lacey showcased herself. Not only has she done a great job of being a character, right? We knew that part was already established. The in-ring was the one that we had a question mark on. But from when she started on the main roster to where she is now, she has really worked really hard. I think people notice that. I mean, you and I definitely noticed that. I'm sure people, the crew watching right now and listening, have noticed that as well, that she has worked extremely hard to get better in the ring, developed her own style. And now when Lacey Evans is in the ring, it's going to be a fight. And that's great, but the mere fact that this whole storyline of Naomi, they're trying to make it Naomi's issue, Naomi's story, but come on, can we put some of the focus on Lacey Evans? That's all I'm saying here. Let's put some of it on her. Let's not just make it, give Naomi a chance. Let's give Lacey Evans a chance. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, Lacey Evans killed it, and
because honestly, Jeff,
look at this.
But honestly, we look at Naomi, right? They're trying to showcase her on the Miz TV and talk about how people rooted for her because she hasn't been given an opportunity. How many opportunities has Lacey Evans been given? But how many opportunities really has Naomi been given? Quite a bit, if you ask me.
And she did a good job when she was with Baron Corbin, too.
And she did a good job, and she did her best. But at the same time, too, let's not make it all about Naomi's like redemption of finally getting opportunities. Can we talk a little bit about Lacey Evans here? Can we give her a shot, an opportunity here? That's all I'm saying. Let's not make it just one side here. Let's make them both both craving for a chance at being noticed. Let's do that.
And then Trinidad, you know what I did? Because at the end of the day, even though you treat me like, you know what?
I treat you like you deserve to be.
Okay. I know I'm in the power chair. Love AJ Styles. Yeah. So you are in the power chair. So I figured we'd close with AJ Styles because what I've...
Well, it's glad that we're closing with AJ Styles because SmackDown decided not to close with him. Exactly. They decided to open up the show with him.
We're going to book it the way it should have been.
Yeah.
AJ Styles, what can you say, man? Grand Metalik, a lot of people are like, oh, man, change the channel. You can't change the channel when AJ Styles is in there. And Grand Metalik, before he was made to look like whatever here on WWE, is a great wrestler. And, wow, a tremendous match. Entertaining match. Grand Metalik can do so much. Even the little steps in the ropes that he did to turn and while he was on the bottom rope.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's crazy, yeah.
It's and AJ Styles, man. Like, he could fight anybody on that roster, and it'd be a good match. Plus, the thing is, they're showcasing other wrestlers, which I love to see, Trent. So the main thing that we got to do is that we got to get these champions or these top names take on guys that we wouldn't even expect. Like, Grand Metalik and AJ Styles, you're thinking, oh, man, snooze fest, right? But no, it's not. AEW's doing the same thing with the wrestlers. That's how you build stars. Now, whether you think Grand Metalik, it was a one-time thing, I would like not to think so, but even if it was, man, like, you're showcasing Grand Metalik. Like, he has a value on that roster, and it was so evident in this matchup, man. I mean, both these guys, AJ Styles is just continues to be, I don't want to say like a hero, you know what I mean?
He's the workhorse.
He's the workhorse. He's the man on the show. He is right now, the best wrestler in the company.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with you. I wouldn't disagree.
And, you know, Seth is doing his thing. Drew McIntyre.
Seth.
All right. Seth can't hold a candle to AJ Styles.
Seth's paying more attention trying to poke people's eyes out right now than actually performing in the ring.
Yeah. And kudos to Matt for covering Raw sometimes. Because a lot of people, I hear the shows and I hear the positivity. Let's be honest. Let's pump. If anyone's pushing positivity on Monday Night Raw, all right, then they're just pushing their agenda to like, oh, to get likes or to get subscribers. Because
hopefully one day working for the WWE.
You can't. Another good week. Another good week? Okay. All right, and I got some magic beans to sell you too. So just call me or call that number that Matt gives out on his Raw thing and leave a voicemail and talk to us, and you tell me that Raw is a good freaking show because it's not. Right now, SmackDown in 1 week has done a better job than Raw has done in the last month.
Yeah, and to continue and just to piggyback off of the whole AJ Styles thing, I mean, there's nothing I could say now that I haven't said before about AJ Styles and what he contributes and what he brings to the table, not only as an individual but now as the Intercontinental Champion, right? But the whole thing you talked about, Grand Metalik, right? We've known this about him since the Cruiserweight Classic, right? But for some reason, WWE has unfortunately not wanted to showcase that and make him more of a parody. You know, the Lucha House Party now. Okay, so they're all just fun and goofy, and they can do some weird moves. But let's put them in individual competition, like Grand Metalik, against a guy like AJ Styles that can go as well. And let's see their talent. And you saw it there. The unfortunate thing about all that, Jeff, and here's the sad truth, right? And I don't want to be a downer here, but here's the sad truth, though. All that AJ Styles is doing, all the grandeur we're giving him and all the BS that Daniel Bryan spouts on his Zoom, you know, can we just mute that Zoom meeting that Daniel Bryan has sometimes? I don't want to hear him being a fighting champion and, you know, AJ Styles has the opportunity. Shut up, Daniel Bryan. Just enjoy being – grow your organic food. Go drink your water through your filters and save the world. Fine. That's great. We appreciate that. But I don't want to hear your jargon right now because if you don't want to be on TV, which is understandable, I get it, and you want to spout out these untruths because Daniel Bryan fails to look in the mirror from a character standpoint and talk about the things he's done that have been wrong and yet points the finger at AJ Styles, and that's all I'll say about that. We'll talk to you later, Daniel Bryan. But in terms of AJ Styles, so all the great things he's been doing and the people he's brought up and every single match he's had right now as the Intercontinental Champion have been great matches from Matt Riddle, Drew Gulak, to Grand Metalik, and the list goes on, right? Yeah. Have been great. Huge credit to him, but also credit to the individual with him because they say, hey, I'm in there with AJ Styles. I got to step up my game. The unfortunate thing about all this positive stuff we're saying, Jeff, and how we mentioned – That should have ended the show. But they started off with that. Again, I'm not going to disagree in terms of, hey, you want to start with a bang and that's your logic? Okay, fine. Start out with the IC title match. But with all this great work that AJ Styles has been doing as the Intercontinental Champion, similar to what he did when he was the WWE Champion on SmackDown, it's all being left on deaf ears because it's not being appreciated the way it should be. And it's not just because he needs to be on last, but honestly, they're not focusing so much on the title as much anymore. I know they're trying to bring prestige back to it and all that jargon, right? But come on, can we showcase AJ Styles as the face of SmackDown? Why is that such a big thing? it's the Universal title. The Universal title has not been defended, and most likely, if the way it goes the way I think it should go, we're not going to see Braun Strowman until SummerSlam. It'll be the equivalent when Brock Lesnar was a champion and never gets defended.
I was going to let you finish.
And even when it gets highlighted, you're not that interested in it because at the time where Braun Strowman won it, it wasn't the moment where he wanted to see it.
Fans complaining about the Universal title? It's never defended on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Where is,
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's okay when Brock Lesnar was doing the same exact thing.
Brock Lesnar
was
never around.
Yeah. It's the same crap. And Jeff said the same thing, too, not here on the WWE Unofficial Podcast, but on the High Spot Podcast, too. When Brock Lesnar is gone, he's been gone for a while from TV now because there's no point
in bringing
him back because there's no audience. You miss him.
Yeah.
You miss him because you brought a certain element to the table you can't garner from anybody else when the title gets defended every single month or every single 2 weeks in this case. So, that's my thing. An amazing match once again. It's like I don't even have to watch these IC title matches to know how good they're going to be, but I do them because I know it's going to be a great match. But unfortunately, I feel it's going to fall under deaf ears because the WWE, for whatever reason, refuses to showcase the fact that AJ Styles is in this point right now. And I don't care what anybody says. You could say Seth Rollins. You could say when Roman Reigns comes back. You could say some of the main guys aren't right now here because they're at home right now dealing with being self-quarantined. It doesn't matter. Even the full roster and that all the talent that WWE has right now, it doesn't matter to me. No one is as good as AJ Styles right now. And I defy you to tell me somebody else. And I will argue with you to the ends of the earth to tell you that you're wrong.
Well said, Trent Sutter. I couldn't agree with you more, and I hate agreeing with you. I wish I could.
I hate when you agree with me because then it disvalues my argument. Because if Jeff agrees with me, then it must be wrong.
Trent Sutter, actually, I enjoyed watching the SmackDown. It was good. A better flow. I know some shows are getting stagnant and they're going to get us frustrated like last week, but we're on SummerSlam time now. And yo, did you hear about there being another pay per view right after SummerSlam Payback? Like the next week.
Oh my god!
And the payback is for us watching SummerSlam. That's why.
Probably.
But we're on the road to SummerSlam. Looking forward to that. Right now, the best angle is on SmackDown. This whole Braun and Fiend adding Alexa Bliss into it, and even Nikki Cross. What's her involvement? We'll find out next week. Hopefully, AJ Styles continues to be the face that runs the place. Baron Corbin stirs the drink on SmackDown and his kingdom. What happens with Matt Riddle, Jeff Hardy? Again, what's his future? Who's his next opponent? What's Sheamus gonna wreak havoc on the locker room? And Sasha and Bayley continue to run that place and run actually Raw and NXT because they can go wherever they want to, and they've become just an awesome tag team, awesome duo, awesome. I wouldn't say faction yet, but a great duo, man, because they're doing great things. So SmackDown right now is doing a good job, Trendsetter. And on that note, guys, you've been listening to the HSP SmackDown Review on the Unofficial Podcast. Guys, make sure to listen all the great shows on here, man. Definitely. We've got your AEW recap show also that we cover, and we look forward to doing that too. You can catch Monday Night Recaps and NXT Recaps and all these other special ones like Wrestling Nostalgia that you can check out as well. A great network here on the Unofficial WWE Podcast. Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
I don't know what that was either. I'm just a little happy that we're getting into my birthday month here, so looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to getting older.
But looking forward to my birthday month. Guys, hope you guys have a great start to your August. Follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. We are on bodyslam.net. We relaunched this week. So much fun. Go to the YouTube channel, like and subscribe, hit that notification bell, and check out the videos from HSP Trendsetter. Anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Nope. The only thing I'd like to add, because you said it all, Jeff, like you always do want to steal the spotlight. Guys, you have been listening to High Spot Podcast for the Jersey Redding crew, the scoundrel, and the guy who gets on my nerves every single time. Can't wait till I don't do it with him anymore. Jeff Martin, I'm the Trendsetter, Brian Berg.
Hey, I just got that, man. That's not cool.
You just got that now? Well, you're 2 seconds too late. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. We will catch you again next week. Jeff, stop talking. I am talking. And don't forget, if you haven't realized it by now, we'll always remind you, especially Jeff, because he forgets all the time. We do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you, the crew. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Yeah, and then...